Good morning. It's good to see everyone out this morning. It has been a great, great weekend so far. Had a great men's study. Got to spend some time with the elders and also their wives. And if you know Jeff Holt, we got to see him some. Julie, a lot. So that was good. But we are very thankful to be here to learn about the work of God and what he is doing here in Amarillo. And to share in our work together. I don't want to be a distraction this morning, so I'll just say this up front, that this is not my normal voice. I've been struggling with allergies for a couple weeks, and my voice decided Wednesday it was going to start quitting. So this is what we have. If it sounds like I'm kind of going into puberty, that's why, okay? That's what happens when this happens. This is going to be a good lesson today. It's going to be a good lesson in the next two periods, not because of me, but because of our good Lord and his good word. And I'm going to commend you to his word this morning to talk about some things I think are very important, as all his word is. But we just recently come out of a study at our home over 1 Peter. It's been super encouraging to us, and it's just something that's been on my mind. I want to share it with you. It's fresh. It's where my heart is right now. And so I want you to turn to 1 Peter with me this morning, 1 Peter, and as you're turning there, I want to talk about the grace of God this morning, the grace of God, and particularly an aspect of that grace. The grace of God is a premium. Everybody wants it. Everybody talks about it in the religious world. I Amazoned Grace of God in their books, and there's 9,000 books written on that topic. I just Google searched. There are at least, that I could find, in the Amarillo area, there's 10 churches here with grace in their name. Grace is a very popular thing to talk about. What exactly is it? What is grace? Talk about it a lot, but what is it? Grace is a gift. It is something that has been given that was not earned. And so the grace of God, well, what is it? What is that gift that he is giving us? Peter gets us to think more about that question. Look at 1 Peter and the 5th chapter. 1 Peter and the 5th chapter. A lot of times, introductions and conclusions at the very end of a letter, they help us with the letter. They help us understand some really basic things about what's really been written. And Peter just comes right out and says, this is why I wrote this book. Look at 1 Peter 5 and verse 12 with me. By Silvanus, our faithful brother, as I consider him, I have written to you briefly, exhorting and testifying that this is the true grace of God in which you stand. Now I'm reading out of the New King James Version. You just might say a little different wording there this morning. But what is the grace of God? You look at that context, he says, the things I have written to you, this is the true grace of God in which you stand. So if there is true grace, then that means there is false grace. And like with every error, there's many shades of error, right? So there's lots of false graces out there. You know, the health and wealth gospel, once saved, always saved, is false grace that people believe in, they trust in. But a major theme, we could talk about a couple different ones in 1 Peter, but the major theme in 1 Peter, if you've read this before, is suffering. Suffering. The major theme, 1 Peter, what he talks about over and over again, is suffering. Then he gets to the end and says, this is the true grace of God. I could just stop right there and get down, and we could just think about that. But I want to go just a little bit deeper. Just to show you that in 1 Peter 1 in verse 6, excuse me, yes, that's right, looking at the different book here. 1 Peter 1 in verse 6, in this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you've been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So that's how he introduces the theme of this book, that what suffering is going to do for you is it's going to refine you, make you better, so that you could be ready for when the Lord returns. Just that idea that suffering is the true grace of God, that's hard for us. It's really hard for us. Think about the churches that have grace on their sign, on their name. Do you think underneath it, it says, come suffer with us? No, that's not what we talk about with grace, right? So let's look a little bit deeper here about why, what is this than just suffering? Look at chapter 2 and verse 11 with me. Chapter 2 and verse 11. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. So the first part of that verse, verse 11, is really his idea of being holy, that we abstain from the things of this world. Then the second, in verse 12, he's telling us that we need to glorify God, even when they speak against us. You know, 1 Peter is a great book for us today because it's really talking about a general hostility toward Christians. It's not necessarily just one particular persecution, but we'll see this in a moment. But there's just a lot of different things that Christians are facing. The hostility toward Christians. Does that sound familiar to Christian teaching? We're getting more and more toward that in our nation today. So it's very applicable for us. And so this kind of helps in seeing that. But what particular thing did you catch that they will see about Christians in verse 12? What particular thing will they see? By your good works. By your good works. Now, your translation, I just want to clarify this as a caveat. Your translation as we go through here, it might say by doing right or by doing well. That word, I'm not a Greek scholar and I'm not an English scholar either. But that word used repeatedly here is not the word for righteousness. It's the word for useful, for doing good. When God does good, sends rain on the just and the unjust. That's the idea of here, doing good toward others. So do you want to see that some more in this text? Let's just spot check some verses here. Look at verse 12 there, and then verse 14. It says at the end there, for the praise of those who do good, do well, do right. Verse 15, that by doing good. Verse 20, the slave there, when you do good and suffer. And then in 3:6, the women there, that they would at the end do good and not be afraid with any terror. 3:11, let him turn away from evil and do good. 3:17, it's better if it's the will of God to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. And then in 4:19, let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to him in doing good as the faithful creator. I'm going to suggest to you that at the core of this book is suffering, and that is the grace of God. But peeling back that some more, that what God has graced to the world, what God has gifted to the world, is you. That's who he's given. He's given you in your suffering to then reach others in the difficulties of this life, to reach out, to push through that, and to be doing good and glorify your Father. Let's look at some life situations. Look at this a little bit closer. What does that look like practically? Again, we're just going to scan through those texts. And 2:12, remember 2:12, if they speak against you as an evildoer, what should you do? Do good, okay? 2:14 through 15, if you're under this worldly government or whatever government situation you're in, do good. 18 through 20, if you're a slave and they beat you, do good. And 3:1-6, if your husband, your spouse, they don't obey God, do good. And 3:9-11, if you're reviled, if you're persecuted, do good. And then chapter 4, 12 through 19, that section, if you suffer as a Christian, if people blaspheme the name that you're called, do good. Over and over again, Peter is pointing us to what we need to be doing as we go through some of that suffering in this life. And you know, that all sounds great. That's great. But you know what the problem with all of that is? You're looking at him. Me. That's the problem. And you. That's the problem. It's hard. That sounds good, but it's hard. And so, is true grace really in our suffering, in our difficulties, to bless others, to do good in those times? Is that really? I'm going to suggest to you that the only way that I can get there, the only way you can get there, is if we remove ourselves. Turn over, keep your finger in 1 Peter. We're going to dive into text in a second, 1 Peter. But turn over to Acts 14 for a moment with me. Acts 14. Now, in this story, Paul and Barnabas are going about teaching and healing to prove their message. And they heal a lame man in Lystra. And as they heal this man, doing something good for the word, well, they get the wrong idea. Well, let's make them gods. Don't do that. Please, do not make us gods. We're not gods. And they say something here that's powerful. Look at Acts 14 there in verse 15. Men, why are you doing these things? We also are men with the same nature as you and preach to you that you should turn from these useless things to the living God who made the heaven, the earth, the sea, and all things that are in them, who in bygone generations allowed all nations to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, he did not leave himself without witness, and that he did good. Gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. And with these sayings, they could scarcely restrain the multitudes from sacrificing to them. Did you catch what God did first? The first verse there in verse 16. The way that God treated the nations. He says there that he allowed them to go off and to do what they're doing. Now, I want to tell you, and you know this, that that's not an allowing like, oh, well, that's a broken heart like the prodigal father. That's the God, like in Jeremiah, when he sees the Moabites and he weeps and he wails over their sins. That's the God we're talking about here. And he allows them to go off into their wickedness. But what did God do while they were out doing all that stuff? Did you catch it? In verse 17, he didn't leave himself without witness. He sent them food, gladness, rain, took care of them. So Paul says, while all these people were out there denying God, and they were living it up at their dinner table and laughing, gladness, you know where that was really from? It's from God. God was blessing them, and they did not deserve it. Now, what's the difference? What's the difference between you and I? When people don't do us right, if we were God, we would go, well, I'm not giving you anything. You're not getting any rain over here. You're wicked. But see, this is the point, that in God's suffering, because he's suffering the sin of what they're doing to him. In his suffering, what is he doing? He's giving. He's blessing. And so when Jesus teaches us to be like our Father in heaven, that's the idea. Sending rain on the just and the unjust. That's the picture here in 1 Peter, that we would be a city on a hill. But everybody suffers. Everybody in this life, they have diagnosis. They have difficulties. They have trials that they go through. But what makes us holy, what makes us different, is the way that we respond to those things. That people will see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. That's radical. That's so different than what the way that people in the world respond. What is our tendency? Let's hunker down. Let's withdraw. Let's pray our way out of this. Let's get out of here as quick as we can. Peter says, God says, be like me. When you are suffering, bless. I gotta take my ways out of there. Because that's not my default when I'm mistreated. It's not my default. But I gotta think about, how does God treat these people that may not treat me the way that I want to be? And the second way to achieve this is to frame our mind toward an ultimate goal. So look at, let's go back to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18. 1 Peter 2, verse 18. If you didn't put your finger there, shame on you. I didn't either. 1 Peter 2 and verse 18. It says, servants or slaves, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable if because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if when you're beaten for your faults, you take it patiently, but when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For to this you are called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously, who himself bore our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, having died to sins, might live for righteousness, by whose stripes you were healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. A beautiful passage there at the end. Did you catch the circumstance that this individual, this man or this woman in verse 18 and 19 are under? This is a long-term suffering. This is a bad relationship, particularly slavery here, and a bad master beating them, treating them awful. And he says to them in verse 19, this is commendable if because of conscience toward God. That's our first point. That's exactly what I was just talking about. If because of conscience toward God, that I understand God's nature, who he is, one endures suffering. Okay? Suffering wrongfully. In verse 19, this is commendable. That word, and yours might say, commends you. In verse 20 at the end, this is commendable before God, or might be favorable. Your version says, and favor there is grace. Talking about the same word here. This is God's grace. This is a grace to you. Now, did you catch how he concludes that teaching toward the slave? Look at verse 21. For to this you were called. Your translation might say, for this purpose you were called. Wow. Everybody wants a purpose in life. This is our purpose? This is our purpose? I'm going to say 100% yes. And I know that because of what he goes on to say. He says, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example. You know that word example is it's the only time it's used in the New Testament, right there. And it is the word for when you lay a piece of paper down and someone's learning to write and they copy it from that. It's an underwriting. What did God do with suffering for us? He laid his son down on this earth and he said, look at him. The way that he treats people. How when they spit in his face. How when they talk bad about him. When the Pharisees are after him. He still teaches them. He still loves them. He still blesses them. Look at him. And the truth of all of this is, when he keeps going there in verse 23 and 24, the truth of all of this is that when you and I, when we bless others who are not treating us right, we are storying the very gospel of Jesus, that while we were dead, while we were sinners, Christ died for the ungodly. While we were enemies, Christ died for us. Bless those who persecute you and treat you terribly. Bless those. That's a hard truth, but that is the true grace of God this morning. So my hope today is that that's given you a picture to go back and think a little bit more about 1 Peter, to whet your appetite and what he's teaching us, that the world will see us differently in the way that we respond, not reviling in return. Do you need some encouragement in that? I do. Look at chapter 4 and verse 12. I'm going to leave you with this thought. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. We can do this because we're looking for the King to come back. Hope that's a blessing to you this morning.